AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
And eventually, nature does what nature does. A spark from a market over 1 kilometer away set ablaze all of that fuel in the rain and burnt a trail that ran like a snake across the surface of the water, according to eyewitnesses, burning everything in its wake, all the way back to the source, the Goyle filling station, where a massive explosion set the night sky ablaze. It could be seen for miles in every direction. And the impact on the lives of those in that community has been felt for years since. Today, we remember those we lost on the 3rd of June, 2015. But sadly, we have to ask ourselves, was it for nothing? It's important that we remember exactly how bad this was. Short memory can sometimes be a blessing. It helps you to manage trauma. But it can be a curse because it distances you from the lesson you're supposed to learn. Today we bring back the lesson. We bring back some of the survivors, some of the heroes, those affected the most by what happened on the 3rd of June. And Kojo, you know two of them, don't you?
Yes, I know two of them. And on the night, I interacted with both of them. One of them worked around the industrial area, around the graphic road. They were stuck in the office. And another was also stuck at home. And I remember both their messages for help. Let me read the first one. Kafui wrote on the night that, "I need help. My daughter and I are not safe. Nadmo is not here yet. We are behind the trade fair. My compound is flooded. We are in our rooms and we cannot come out." That was the first person calling for help.
Tell us about the second person.
Yes, and the second one is my other friend, Akusia Kwafu Ojiri. Now, Akusia, on the night, was working at GH1. You remember GH1 Studios, where it is around Graphic Road? And they were stuck.
Right.
So she placed a call to me. We were on the phone for some time, trying to calm her down and trying to get her some help. A week later, this is what she wrote on Facebook. "Last week by this time, we were stuck in a flooded building. We had to stay in a flooded building overnight. The mosquito bites, the scary smell of the fuel, the uncertainty, the fear of the floor collapsing, the fear of death, the fear of not seeing your family, the fear of not being missed when you are gone, the fear of leaving the world with things undone. Thank God for His saving grace. Thank God for unmerited favor. Thank God for His protection. Imela is still all I can say to you, Lord. I am forever grateful. And thank you all who prayed and were worried with and for me."
Those are two who were lucky enough to survive, right?
Yeah.
They're lucky to still be with us.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they are with us right now on the phone. Let's say good morning to Kafwi. Kafwi, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
It's a special pleasure to say good morning to you because I know that if things had gone the other way around, 10 years from now, we would be mentioning your name as someone we remember.
Yeah, I
can understand that.
Walk us through as comfortably as you can, because I suspect that this is quite a traumatic experience for you. But as comfortably as you can, Kafwi, tell us what happened that night.
Okay, so that on June 3rd, usually I don't close early from work, but on that particular day I closed early because my shop was just at trade fair. So I picked up my daughter and then we went home. And when the weather began to change, I remember I called a friend and said, it looks kind of funny, but thank God I'm home. Little did I know that even being home was going to be worse, you know. And it started to rain. And I was on a call with a friend, Larry, at the time. And Larry said, look, if it's getting worse, you just have to get out of the place. But I kept telling him, it's okay, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. Until, it wasn't fine anymore. And I had to call out for help. And the only thing I could do was to post on Facebook. And it looks like everybody was all over the place. I mean, everybody needed help. So nobody was minding me at the point. And Larry said something. You know, this morning, I just remembered and I actually sent him a message. He said, look, if the last thing for me to do is to save your daughter and you, I would do it. And that was how he came. In fact, he swam on my compound to enter my room to bring us out. He carried my daughter on his head and me at his back. That was what he did, and that was how we got saved.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, my friend Larry, that's Larry Dogbe to come.
Yeah, we suspected you meant Larry Dogbe, good old Larry. Thank God for him, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was my savior on that day.
No
my
doubt.
Hero.
No doubt. Well, someone else who has something to be very, very grateful for is Akosua, right? Akosua Kwafu Ojiri. Now you, Akosua, good morning to you.
Good morning, Kojo.
Yeah, you were stuck at work.
Yes.
How did that happen?
So it was like a normal day. You know, I used to work at Charterhouse at the time, and you know, Charterhouse and GH1 were owned by the same like company. So
yeah.
We were working on a new production. So it was after work at Charterhouse, we had just gone and we were done with the production. Then it started to rain. We were like, oh, this, like, let's stay here and let the rain subside so that we can go home afterwards. So we're all just at the reception area, like usual media house thing, teasing each other, laughing. And then it started to rain. So one of the guys came and said, oh, there's water on the compound. So those who have parked, they should move to the next, they should move outside or to the next company because it appeared that they had a bit of a higher ground. So people moved their cars and then we went back and we were just chatting. Oh, it's just rain. The rain will stop. And then out of nowhere, there was some sudden rush of water into the reception area. And before we could think, the reception was flooding. So they asked all of us to run upstairs. You know, there was, those of you who had been to GH1, the old one, there was a wooden stairs and the upstairs was wooden. So we all had to rush upstairs because in about less than 5 minutes, the whole place was flooding very, very fast. So we all just ran upstairs. We were there before we could tell. The whole compound was flooding. It was dark and the light had gone out. And we were all scared because the stairs was getting soggy. And so when you step on the wood, you could feel like it's a bit moving. And we were all scared. There was raining. The rain won't stop. The compound kept flooding. and like he had covered the generator, had covered the GH1 wall at the time. So we're scared, only to see the sky turn orange. And we're all like, oh, someone's house is on fire. We saw the explosion happen right in front of us because of where we were on the graphic road.
Yeah.
But we didn't know the extent of the devastation. The NADMO lines were not going through. It was so frustrating. I think I posted so many times on Facebook that day, Kojo had to call me to calm me down because I was frustrated. I was like, emergency lines are supposed to work in an emergency. That's why they are there. And the NADMO lines were not going through. And we were terrified. At a point, we could smell fuel in the water. And we were scared because we don't know what lightning will happen. We don't know whether the fire we are seeing can happen. It was torture. But fortunately for us, one of our colleagues, Emily's brother was with the army and were part of the rescue team. And so they came for us, I think around 3 a.m. And even as I'm talking about this, I just remember that in the middle of the night, I think after midnight, when we were still scared, we saw a man and a heavily pregnant woman and a young boy walking through the water. So the boys asked her, "Where are you going?" She was just standing there. Like, she couldn't talk. She was standing in the water. She was pregnant, standing in the water. And the man had carried a little boy. So we were like, she should come upstairs. And at least this place is safer than being in the water. Their church apparently was flooding. So she had to climb out of the church with her son. And so the man was also was a passenger in the car. So they were helping. And I remember looking at the little boy shivering upstairs when we were trying to cover him, and the pregnant woman was just crying. And at that point, I was like, okay, I'm scared, I'm afraid, but this person's predicament seems worse than mine because she's pregnant. And after having two children of my own, I now understand what she was going through. And so we stayed there till about 3 a.m. or around 4 a.m. and it was this uncertainty because at that time still the NADMO lines were not working. And we heard a voice, GH1 people, are you there? And we're like, yeah, who is this? And then we said yes. And he said, Emily has reminded me that you people still haven't been attended to. So we are here. We are coming for you. Just give us some time. Because of the army, military men were coming for us.
Yeah.
And when they came, they gave us that, I don't know what it's called, so that canoe-like thing. I think they have a special name for it. So they brought it close. And I'm not a short person, but when I stepped into the water was above my waist level. And when I sat in the thing, the canoe-like thing, I just burst out crying. I was just crying, and the military man kept telling me that it's okay, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe. And we managed to, it took us to the STC area that was dry at the time, and we managed to find our way back. Even at that time, we still didn't know how the orange sky we saw, what it actually meant. We thought someone's house was on fire, was an explosion. It was later that morning that we saw the bodies that had been burnt, that we understood that what we were looking at was a devastation. Yeah.
Did you smell the fuel in the water?
Yes. You could smell it in the water.
I can only imagine your relief.
It's even surprising that it's been 10 years. Like, every June 3rd is very... It's like... And I thought I had overcome it till, I think after a few months, we went back there, and it had threatened to rain, and it started drizzling. I was behaving like a crazy girl at GH1. It's going to rain, just walking around. That was when I realized that what I had gone through was, like, it's trauma that I needed to, because every time it threatened to rain around that side, I act abnormally because I don't think I had processed what had actually happened till a few months later. Yeah.
Oh,
recounting the events of June 3, 2015 with Kafui and Akosua. Kafui was home with her daughter when the rain came and trapped her. Akosua and her colleagues were at work. It was a regular day until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And she just thanks God that they were rescued. Kafui, your daughter was 7 years old at the time. How old? Well, I mean, she's 17 now. Where is she? And does she remember these events?
Yes. And so I think she still suffers from the trauma that anytime it begins to rain, she reacts in a particular way. So she hates rainy season. She's, I don't know how I'm going to be handling that, but she just does not like rainy season. Yesterday when she went to school, and she messaged me that it's June again and it's going to be raining. I don't think I really want to be going to school.
Poor girl.
Yeah.
Poor girl. Yeah.
It was quite traumatic, you know.
No doubt.
And you know, with kids, it's very hard on them. So,
yeah.
But
now, I mean, both of you, obviously, you didn't move out from, or you didn't stop working at these locations after that night. Have you seen anything change? If these circumstances were to repeat themselves, is there anything new that's been done that would keep people safe?
Well, I have moved from that particular home because the trauma was too much for me.
Hmm.
I actually moved out the following week.
Oh,
so
wow.
I haven't gone back there. Yeah, it was a home I owned, but I let it go. I couldn't stay there anymore.
Understandably, yeah.
Yeah. And I had to stay at somewhere that I feel way, way safer now. And I don't have to worry about flood. But it looks like much has been done in that particular area. The last time I drove through there, when I went to visit a friend, I saw there's some drains that had been constructed. And I believe that should help should such an incident happen again. But most of these things are actually about attitude and how I think it's just about attitude, how we handle even waste in this country, you understand? Because I strongly believe that if we don't have waste blocking all the drains, we may not be experiencing some of these things that we experienced 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So if we have to work at something, it has to be more intentional, and then people should know our attitude towards waste management. It's one of the contributing factors.
Yeah. Akosua.
Yeah. Hi, Akosua. Well, I no longer work with Charterhouse, but I'm still in the media. I'm still the comms person. I drive around that side of town a lot because I used to live in Dansoman. I don't think that much has changed. Accra flooded a few weeks ago.
Yep.
I believe that our ignition for doing the right thing is always from a pain of a disaster. People die, and properties are lost. Like we are ignited to do the right thing because disaster. When the disaster subsides, everybody goes back to doing what they used to do, which is not fixing the problem. I think that our ignition for doing the right thing should come from a sense of duty, an understanding of the responsibility that has been placed on you, whether you are a citizen, whether you are a duty bearer. If it's your job to ensure that drains are not clogged, do it. Don't wait for a disaster to be ignited to do something that you're supposed to be doing already. If you are a citizen, do the right thing. Don't drop refuse anywhere. Don't clog gutters. Be a good citizen. I think a lot of the time, that's our problem. When something happens, the ignition is from the euphoria of the disaster and the pain of it. And so after people move on and we forget the disaster, nothing happens. But if it's from a sense of duty, we'll be able to sustain it. I was expecting that maybe there will be a policy or implementation of a policy that everybody can trace to what happened on June 3rd, and we can say that because of June 3rd, this and this and this is what, as a nation, we have agreed that we would do to ensure that lives are not lost again. Because sitting here remembering 10 years on, it could have been me. If I had decided to leave earlier, I could have been stuck in the water, because the chances are to cycle to pick a car to Gansoman. And only God knows what would have happened. So in all of this, I think what I feel we should take away with is that our ignition for doing the right thing should come from a deep sense of responsibility and duty, and not from anything else.
Yeah. Akosua and Kafui, your voices matter because of what you've been through, and you are certainly speaking to the people who need to hear it. So let's pray that indeed it falls on fertile ground. But we thank God for your lives, and we thank you for your time with us this morning. God bless you both.
When the flooding happened, we did a lot of work together, engaged a lot of policymakers. I want to know from him, 10 years on, with all the activism, are we making the right changes, or we've rather retrogressed? And if so, what should we do? Faisal says that on that day, I was at Circle Tiptoe Lane in the morning before the rain started. If I had delayed any further, I would have been a casualty. Daniel says, we haven't taken any lesson from that. We haven't learned anything. We look so comfortable doing the usual thing until something happens. We need to do better. And Denny says, the situation is still the same for me. We need to put adequate measures in place to curb such occurrences in the future. Tony Asare is an architect and the president of the Ghana Institute of Architects. Good morning, Tony. Welcome to the Super Morning Show.
Morning, Kuju, and good morning to all the listeners.
I hope you are well.
I'm fine, thank you.
You're a keen follower of our urban issues, our spatial planning, and related matters. June 3, 2015. To June 3, 2025. What has changed? Your thoughts so far? We've seen a lot of these things still happening.
I think we haven't had much change in the construction industry. Our etiquette when it comes to urban management. Behavioral change that most of us have been talking about. But if there is anything, it's just gotten worse.
Tony, can you hear me? I seem to
yes,
have lost
I can
you.
Hear you.
Yes, yes. Please go ahead. I lost you.
So I was saying that nothing much has changed. Our behavior towards managing our environment, the kind of construction that we do, and even when it comes to our urban management, flood management, development, and everything, I don't think much has changed. That if there is anything, it's just gotten worse.
Tony, we lost 150 people on that day. In fact, more than 150 people. We lost property. Our lives were changed. Our daily activities were thrown off course. 10 years on, nothing has changed. Who should we hold responsible for the dystopia we find ourselves in?
When it comes to issues of flooding, I think we have a shared responsibility. The government alone cannot be held responsible for, you know, managing floods, making sure that we have enough resources to give to NADMO to make sure that we save people who are in flood distress positions and all of that. I don't think that it is just a responsibility of state. If you know, we all know that we are not supposed to build in flood prone areas. Yes, we can blame the Ministry of Local Government, we can blame the planning officers, we can blame development control, but we need to also blame ourselves when we see that it is very obvious that where we are building is completely inappropriate. you know, so I think we should look at the shared responsibility.
But, you know, Tony, we've always been talking about shared responsibility, but we vote for people. We put our taxes behind institutions. We have laws. And we've elected some people to ensure that these laws are used to bring sanctity into the environment. So, yes, it's a collective responsibility. But don't you think that there are a group of people, institutions who have really gone to sleep and have resulted in these things continuously happening?
I agree with you to an extent, but I think that we need to also look at the other side of the story. Recently, we had conversations about the spillage of the dam at Weja.
Yeah.
And I raised the issue that 20, 25 years ago, everybody talked about the fact that we were not supposed to build along, you know, those flat plains. I have a personal encounter with somebody who brought me some drawings to do for them, you know, in that area. And I prompted the person that those are flood-prone areas. And they really went ahead to do their construction without the architect's advice. Subsequently, when I heard that those places were flooded and they were now blaming government that we should find a way of providing for temporary places for them to be able to hold up, I was surprised. It's not just the fact that the place floods, but if you have areas where when it floods, you have septic tanks flooding, wells flooding, you know, and you have a mix of all sorts of kinds of water, you know, then you know that it's not just the flooding, but post-flooding, you have issues to do with infections, cholera, and all of that. So that is one side of the story. The other side of the story, which you are telling, which I still agree with you, has to do with government responsibility. And we need to look into that. Every year, we spend excess of $200 million doing dredging, drainage in Accra. But the floods keep getting worse. I mean, along the Graphic Road and the banks of the Odo, we will build around the time when it is dry season. But then when it starts raining and the whole place gets flooded, we can't blame anybody else. We shouldn't have been there. Shouldn't have been there. We, you know, and it is very difficult to insist that you want to demolish along the banks. I feel very sorry for the minister who is demolishing structures along the ram in the Ramsar site. We are not supposed to be there. By the laws we have in this country, we can live in forest reserves, but we cannot live in wildlife reserves. So we should be demolishing everything in those areas. But you know the kind of pressure and the way this country is so polarized when it comes to some of these issues. So when we talk about collective responsibility, it's everywhere. I mean, the public servants cannot act alone. But if they are acting and they get the support of the public, then we can serve the public better.
Okay, Tony, I want you to think about two things you think immediately we should do. Two things. One, we should do immediately, and one in the long term to ensure that we build an utopian environment to make us live better within the city. But let me talk to David Ampofu. David is the founder of Channel 2 Communications. He is currently the CEO of the Upstream Petroleum Chamber. David is a man of many parts and the main work I've done with David has been on fixing the urban mess, and he's very passionate about the environment. David, 10 years ago, we were talking about it, about this same issue. 10 years on, the problem hasn't changed much.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. No, you're right, isn't it? I've been listening to you. I mean, has anything changed? I mean, I don't even know whether the answer is yes or no, really. Do you? Could that be a starting point
that we just, if you like, begin to look in more detail at what has evolved over the years. Flooding has been with us for a while. We know that. I mean, June 3rd, it stands out because of the explosion, but the phenomenon of flooding, essentially drowning people and the disaster. And you're right, we've done quite a bit of work, and yet we do, I don't know, it's a good question. And as I was listening to you, I was thinking, that maybe find out that, is it any different? So that perhaps we can learn some lessons, or we can say, okay, look, we've been doing this all this time. So that's a good starting point. I would say that. And maybe when you have an occasion like June 3rd, it gives us a chance for that kind of reflection.
You know, around June 3rd, we carried a report from the Lakeside area. Two people lost their lives on the Lakeside Bridge. 2 weeks ago, when it rained, about four people lost their lives in the same location. So June 3rd, around that location, was about two. Now it's double.
Wow. I mean, we know in a basic sense, don't let's talk about too many things, that we must not block waterways. And how this is the discussion at one. I mean, look, this is multiple stuff. It's not just because of one thing. And yet, there are things that we can all do. But the fact remains, and I like that you pointed it out, that it is the job of government, local government. We must understand that, strengthen them, give them the resources, supervise, and ensure that work gets done. I never accept it when I hear people say we must all take the blame. We don't all have to take the blame. And so, I don't know if you or somebody said it earlier perfectly, that we hire people to do this work and look after them as best as we can. So we have some work to do, really. I mean, look, we know it. So each year, at least, maybe we just have a practice where, like how we have our festivals and so on, you know, where you know the rain is about to come. So what is the pre-rain festival? Do you understand me? So maybe it's a time of cleaning. It's a time of awareness of less plastic. It's a time of asking your assembly man what he's doing. Just do this, you know, in the lead to the rain. That's a kind of preparation.
Mm. Now, my question to you, you've done this for years. You were journalist of the year before I was born. So you've seen the changing faces of our urban space. Over the past 10 years, we've worked together. Where do you think we should go from here?
Look, it's hard for me to say. All I'll say is that government must work, must be made to work. We must and we must contribute to it, as in pointing it out when we think things are not working. But we really, really, really have to understand that people have possibilities, the buck stops in certain places, and those places must be held accountable. It must work. I mean, this is also a sanitation issue, by the way. It's water and sanitation. And then you have the cholera bit that pops up also every now and then. So, I mean, I don't think that the town is not planned. I'm sure there are excellent plans, you know, in the places where they were done. I don't know, the city is just growing faster than we've been able to keep up with it. Look at the expansion, the rows of containers along the edges, left, right, center. And then the whole thing about when you want to relocate people, a certain sensitivity towards that. Oh, you are not being reasonable. Why are you making people suffer? Oh, no. We can't do that. You see what I mean? So,
yeah.
And you're in media. You have to try and make sure that the conversation on it is good. The total media these days is all conversation is allowed. So some people just come, they don't teach us anything. And they may have even more time than those from whom we can learn something. So that's why you have media, traditional media. You have to help point people down certain ways, like what you've done today on this program. You're asking me what I can do. Believe me, it's in your hands.
Well, David, on that, maybe we should have a conversation and bring fixing the urban mess back.
I think continue, I've never stopped in a way, isn't it? But all right, we should.
Yeah. Now, Tony, let me come to you. Where do we go from here?
This conversation has been going on for ages. I published an article in 2008. Every year I read it, it's as if we published it yesterday. So most of the solutions that we have are long-term. But let me look at some of the short-term solutions. One of the first things that we need to do is to be able to improve our flood warning solution. You see, if you look at the very serious flooding that we have had along the coastal areas, they happen around 6:37 up to about 9 p.m. Period is when you get high flood, high tide, where you have the sea coming a bit inland. So the moment there is rain and storm water cannot exit into the sea, you realize that it starts backing up. And so it's more very difficult to manage. And then also, because it's at night, it's very difficult to be able to find ways of doing emergency response. So that takes me to the second short-term plan. We need a very comprehensive emergency response plan. You see, we have politicized NADBO. So we get people, appointed by political officers, to such positions who may not necessarily be very technical. I think it is time for us to put round pegs in round holes, and then equip them properly when it comes to some of these things. We should have dinghies. We should be able to map up the area and know buildings that, within low-lying areas, which can easily flood, and then give preference to buildings that are in such areas. So we need to be able to look at that. In the medium and long-term plans, one of the things that I'm very happy about is this government attempts to restore wetlands. They shouldn't just demolish the buildings. They should cut away all foreign materials and make sure that the wetlands restore itself so that we can have birds, and fish and all of that, and get the fauna in place.
So the demolition must come with evacuation of the demolished material.
Yes, evacuation of the evacuated. We should evacuate the material. That's very important. So that is one. The other thing has to do with something which has become a cliche, which we need to be very careful and make sure that we actually actualize it. Sustainable planning solution. Anytime we talk about it, it's as if it's become a cliche. But we have come to the point where we should look at sustainable planning, write it in our laws, make sure that we train our staff at the Ministry of Local Government for them to understand it so that they can involve that in development control. So that is very key. The other things which, it's difficult for every government to be able to achieve 100% is infrastructure improvement. It's about drainage. It's about covered gutters. It's about making sure that we build our roads and our bridges and all of that, devoid of silting. So all of that is part of the long-term solution. Now, we also have to start looking at climate resilience design. A lot of our designs we carry out, we end up having a very large mass concrete driveways that is paved. In fact, sometimes you have these tiled driveways, which makes the ground impermeable. It is time to make sure that we give incentive to people who design houses and have more greens, so that we can improve percolation and reduce runoff.
We have to look at flood-resistant construction in areas that are prone to flooding, so that if we could have some of their buildings on stilts and things like that, we have to be scientific about it.
So there are areas, no matter what we do, people have to settle there. So we need to change the way we build and re-engineer our houses to be able to exist within those environments.
That is doable. I think we should be able to start thinking along those lines.
Thank you so much, Tony, for joining us this morning and sharing your thoughts with us. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Tony Asare is the president of the Ghana Institute of Architects. He's an architect with years of experience. And David spent some time with us, not on his show, Time with David, but on the Super Morning Show. David Ampofu shared some time with us.